welcome to the English Florist Podcast. Today, Linz is preparing for a wedding and taking your questions in the flower studio. We begin in Linz's happy place, Great Penn Wood, with Maple, musing over the question of importing flowers. To import or not?
Maple! Puppy!
Hello, hello. It's me again. Welcome to another edition of the English Florist Podcast. I'm in my happy place, Penn Wood, a lovely woodland just up the road from my home in West Berkshire. And I'm obviously with Maple because this is where I walk her. She's not really an on-lead dog. In fact, truth be told, I really struggle with walking her on a lead. She nearly pulls my arm out of its socket. So it's much easier to bring her somewhere like this, and she can just literally hoon around like a complete lunatic that she is, with her big, huge tongue lolloping. She'll be coming up in a minute, wanting to give me a stick. You want this? You ready? Oh, it got caught in the bush. That's going to be a tricky one. It's Holly. Can you get it? No, she's not that clever. She's clever, but not that clever. Try another one. Come over here. How about this one? Anyway, where was I? Yes, so I'm in my happy place. This is where I come and walk Mapes most days. It's a beautiful day. I'm just looking up at the tree canopy. We're in the beautiful, beautiful, it's like a cathedral of beech, and the light streaming through, and the green leaves are almost translucent, and I can just see like a lovely sunlight haze just streaming through the trees. There are other sections of this wood which is just all fir, but this bit is all beechy, and so the trees are really, really leggy, and on the ground it's just old, dead, crispy brown leaves. It's a lovely, big, airy space, actually. You feel very protected. And as a woman walking in the woods alone, which I do all the time, I do actually feel incredibly safe here. There are some places I walk, and I sometimes feel a little bit uneasy because I can come here really early in the morning or really late at night, but I never feel like that here. And I often go completely off-piste and get lost. But no, it's a really lovely place. So I'm really looking forward to sharing with you a conversation that I had with a friend of mine, Paula Eddington from Pop-Up Blooms. We met and walked and talked about something that happened when I went to visit her. We share a common love of British grown flowers, and I don't know whether you follow me on social media, but I use Dutch imported flowers as well as British grown flowers, and I'm not wedded to one or the other. I love the fact that I can buy in the growing season here in the UK beautiful, beautiful locally grown flowers, and I'm very much all about arranging flowers in the moment, in the season, what's available that week. And my clients very much embrace that kind of philosophy as a florist. And so I don't promise them anything, really. They often give me an aesthetic, a colour, a look or a mood, and then I'm able to interpret that. So very often, even the week of the beginning of the week of a wedding, I don't quite know what I'm going to be getting in later on that week until my growers tell me. And then I can top up with my Dutch blooms. So I can kind of fill in the gaps, shall we say, from Holland. And some weeks I can't get anything that I need for a particular wedding, and I have to buy everything from the Dutchman. And actually, I don't think that's much of a problem, but I have come up with a little bit of stick and perhaps criticism from people who feel, because of the environmental situation that we are experiencing, that importing flowers from further afield, you know, from anywhere, not just from Europe, but from Africa, Colombia, Ecuador, is almost morally reprehensible. And I struggle with that. I hear their argument, I understand their argument, but in order for me to do my job, as an event florist, 365 days of the year, I can't buy flowers for life's beautiful events in the darkest, deepest winter days. There isn't anything in the garden. Come the first frosts of October, most English flower growers, unless they're really quite big organisations, don't have anything to offer us. So, you know, how do I do my job? And there's room for all of us. I applaud those businesses that somehow navigate not having any flowers. Maybe they use just dry flowers, but that's not what my customers are expecting. And so I have traversed a bit of criticism when I've spoken about my views that I'm talking to you now about. And so I met Paula. She came to do a one-to-one, and you know, it transpired. She'd had 30 years in the industry of being a flower buyer for some of the really big high-end supermarkets, and she was a wealth of information. So she very kindly invited me to Cambridgeshire and gave me a tour of some of the really big flower growers who are growing here in the UK on a scale. We're talking like 4 million tulips. And when I saw them, they were just finishing the tulip season and just planting up about 2.5 million stocks, one of the companies in particular. And then I realised that they can't possibly supply to small businesses like me. They, you know, I only want, I don't know, 20 stocks at the most. They need to be selling 20,000 or 200,000 stocks to places like the supermarkets. So we're going to talk, I'm not going to give too much away, but we're going to talk to Paula. I'm going to encourage her to kind of really open up this discussion. All I want, and I completely respect people have an opinion on this and they're very valid opinions, but I have an opinion too, and I just want there to be an open, honest debate about it and none of this kind of muckslinging. And I do feel like it's got a little bit sometimes. So yeah, we're just going to talk about it and I can't wait to share it with you. Hello, we're in my flower studio, and this is where we often do the questions and answers, or the mailbag as we like to call it. And this is a fantastic question from Little Blue Butterfly Floral, and she asked me, what made you decide to change career and become a florist? Right, so that was a long time ago, and for those of you that don't know, before I was a florist, I practiced as a midwife, a community midwife in Southeast London. And I was actually on a career break when I decided to change career. And I didn't actually have an epiphany and think, oh, I think I want to be a florist. I had a baby and I was at home. We'd moved out of London. And so I was sort of in between. I had to go back to work because I was on maternity leave. And I was going back to work in a place that I hadn't worked before. And the whole setup and the whole way they worked didn't really kind of, it wasn't how it was. So there was a lot of change going on. And I just thought it was a perfect opportunity to, if I was going to change career, this would be the perfect pause in my current career to do something. And so a friend, I think it was a series of events, really. I was invited to do a floristry workshop. So I went to a garden centre and I had a little play. And I have to say, it was pretty rubbish. And then I realised I really enjoyed making that arrangement. And I tried a couple of times at various Christmases and things, making things. And then a friend of mine had a baby and I gathered together some flowers. I probably bought them from the supermarket or maybe a little local florist or something. And I cobbled together this arrangement. And it was a conversation with her that really sort of changed my kind of penchant for maybe doing something creative to, oh, well, my aunt's a florist. And so that's how I met Lou. And I ended up doing a little floristry course. And at the very beginning, it was just something for me and not a career choice. I didn't wake up one day and think, oh, I think I'm going to be a florist. I need to get qualified and I need to become a business. It was a very slow burn, a real gradual transition from happy flower ranger to working with a lady who was a professional event florist and realizing with her, and there is a backstory to this. Obviously, when I first met Lou, I had this moment when I worked with her the very first time and thought, this is it. This is what I want to do. But until then, I had done, I'd been fannying about, really, playing with flowers. And it was a very slow burn. I didn't set out to be a florist, and I had to work around small children. I had two very small children at the time, and I had a very privileged position of being able to be at home and to raise my children, but it wasn't enough. And I say that not selfishly and arrogantly. I felt like my life surrounded around my children and being a wife and a mother, a stay-at-home mother. And there wasn't much room for me. And the floristry was almost like a creative outlet for me. And I got so much pleasure from it. And so from that creative outlet grew very, very slowly this flower arranging business through word of mouth, through friends, just arranging bouquets and things. I very, very slowly got jobs through school, at the school gate, bouquets, until one of our friends announced that she was getting married, and I offered my services. God help her, but I did. And that's where it all began, really. And I also did a short, basic introduction to floristry on City and Guilds course, which did teach me some things, but I was working alongside Lou. She had the fully fledged, very, very smart business, arranging a lot of wedding flowers and doing flowers for Mansion House. And I honed my skills on her. She taught me what it was to be an event florist. And there is a difference between event floristry and shop floristry. I've never been a retail florist. I've never owned a retail outlet. I've only just worked pretty much from home all of these years. So yeah, it grew slowly, and I don't know, actually, eventually I realised I had this little potential for a business, and it grew and it grew and it grew, and to where it is today. And so it's been a slow, gradual evolution, and it's been, yeah, a joy. And I'm so not done. I'm so not done. There's so much more left in me. I'm young still, don't you know? It is Thursday the 13th of October, and today is wedding prep day. I've been in the studio all day, and I have made tomorrow's wedding flowers, pretty much. I think there's some buttonholes and some corsages to make, and I just need to go through my list to check that I've got everything that I need. The van is packed. I've already done a check to see if it's going to be frosty overnight, and it's going to be about 10 degrees, so that's quite useful. It's a very underrated skill, packing a van for a wedding. For years and years, I used to have a car which I would put down the seats and shoehorn things in. And then my weddings grew, and I'm on my second van now. I had my first van for about 7 or 8 years. And this van, similar size, just a little bit more reliable, shall we say. And packing a van is, I think, it's a skill. Honestly, I think I could probably run a workshop on packing my van. It's carefully done, because you have to shoehorn in arranged flowers as well as buckets of flowers for things that you can't actually pre-organise and pre-arrange and pack into your van. And sometimes if a wedding is so big, you might need a second van and therefore another florist who can drive that van. And so it can be quite complicated, and packing is key. If you go over a bump and you've got delicate glassware, I've had hurricane vases rolling across the van and pedestal plinths, really heavy metal pedestal plinths, crashing into glassware and smashing it. All sorts of disasters can happen through bad packing. And so over the years, I have honed my skills, and Nobody packs my van apart from me, so I know that everything has gone into the van. Although the last wedding I did, my co-florist Fiona packed it, and it was a notable day. In fact, I just reminded her earlier this afternoon how nobody normally packs my van. It was a real kind of trust thing as I carried on making the table centres the other week. But today I have been making all of the bouquets, and I've got some big vase arrangements which are part of the ceremony aisle decoration. And Fiona has been doing the table centres, the top table and the actual guest table centres, which pretty much took all day. It's quite a labour of love, carefully done, beautifully executed to my exacting recipes. And the flowers came in yesterday morning, so I conditioned them. They had a really good drink during yesterday, and I bought all my roses, and I have got helichrysums in this week's autumnal palette, and they were quite tight and shut when they arrived in the boxes yesterday from Holland. And they came into the kitchen last night with the central heating on and pinged open literally in an hour or two. They were just lovely and wide and round and really beautiful. And the roses by this morning were really, they really had opened and were showing a lot more colour. I mean, they were pretty lovely anyway, but I just, for a wedding, you want your flowers to be properly open. You don't want, if you're giving a gift bouquet, you want the flowers to be sort of semi-open, showing the promise of what's to come. But the pleasure and the enjoyment is actually in the opening process, sitting on a table for you to admire. At an event, when it's all about that moment, you need to have all your flowers absolutely on point. And sometimes flowers can come in a little bit tight. Ranunculus and tulips are classics for not being open. Anemones, often spring flowers, bizarrely. They're often picked when they're shut. And sometimes, as I say, roses can be, they can be showing colour, but I really want them properly, what I would describe as blown, at their absolute point of perfection, which is often just before they go over, to be honest. And so just bringing them into the warm, as we're now into autumn, just encourages them just to give a little bit more. And then by the time we've manipulated them and cut their bottoms, their stems, and pushed them into arrangements, and they've sort of had another day or so, they're absolutely looking beautiful by the time we actually deliver them, which in this case will be tomorrow. And it, the same for the bouquet flowers as well. Everything has to be absolutely at the point of perfection. And so that's all done, and I'm just going to go in and, well, I'm going to have a cup of tea, actually. That's what I was just doing, just going to check my checklist to make sure I've got everything in the van that I should. And I think it's so much more than flowers, actually. It's candlesticks, vases, it's, you know, the right coloured candles, taper candles, pillar candles, candles to go in lanterns, so many different accents that go into creating a table setting that you could be forgiven that we literally get up the morning of the wedding, which often people assume that I do, arrange the flowers, lob them in the van, tootle up to the venue, deliver them all and go home, and jobs are good. And it's so much more than that. The ordering of the flowers takes probably 2 to 3 hours for me to actually sit down and work out my budget, to work out what is available in that particular week. And that might involve me contacting local growers, or it might involve me going onto a website and looking at the Dutch auctions and seeing what is available from my Dutch wholesalers. And we are in October, as I said, and this week we've had our first frosts, which means that for a lot of the English locally grown flowers, when I say English, I do mean locally grown, as in within about 20 minutes, half an hour of where I live. The flowers that I buy from my local growers, there's very little now. We really are coming to the end. And very often those local growers are saving them for their own weekly bouquets that they sell. So they won't have anything for florists like myself. Certainly there aren't any more dahlias. And I kind of feel like I've moved on from dahlias anyway now. They are a late summer, early autumn flower, and they run to the first frosts. And At this point, I tend to turn almost exclusively to my Dutch suppliers. Without them, I certainly wouldn't have a business going forward from now until about March, April, possibly even May. So I look to see what they've got growing in their big glass houses, and they will have a supply of flowers throughout the year for me. So I'm still getting lots of beautiful roses, and I'm obviously influenced by the season, and so it's chrysanthemum season. And I did have some beautiful chrysanthemums earlier this week for one of my local jobs, and that were grown down the road by one of my suppliers. I love the smell of a chrysanthemum, and I love their shape. They are truly beautiful and have been utterly blighted, their reputation, by garage forecourts, I fear. And people often look at them rather sniffily and think that they're a poor relative to something else. Whereas a really beautifully grown chrysanthemum is utterly splendid. I mean, they really are quite majestic. And everyone's raving about dahlias. Well, I think I would choose a chrysanthemum over a dahlia very often because they smell so beautiful. The colours are just absolutely gorgeous. So I've got some chrysanthemums which I bought in Holland, really big ones for my displays in the ceremony tomorrow. And I've got lots of lovely bright crocosmias. I've got seed heads. I've got rose hips. And I'm also buying autumnal foliage, which has got a sort of, it's turning, it's got a lovely reddy hue to it. Or maybe I'm just buying red coloured foliage as well, just to kind of really lean into the seasonal colours. Unfortunately for me, this wedding is burnt orange. It's got lots of lovely bright golden accents to it, and so it just lends itself so beautifully to October. So yeah, really happy with it so far. Just need to do one of my favorite pastimes now and go and sit in the studio and just make my buttonholes.
And if you want to hear how Lindsay's day continued making buttonholes, go back to last Sunday's extra snippings called Making a Buttonhole With Me, episode number 35. Lindsay is back in 2 weeks' time, and if you'd like to have a question read in the mailbag, write to Linz via Instagram at The White Horse Flower. The show is a Loading Zone production.